Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Ivy Podcast. I'm your host, Cesar Romero. And today we have Sarah Stube. She is a recruiter for high profile staffing. And in today's episode, we're going to be talking about her journey into the industry and what are some of the tools, strategies that she can recommend for other recruiters out there, and of course, much, much more. But Sarah, it's a pleasure to have you on the show. Thanks for making the time.
Absolutely. Thanks for inviting me. I'm excited to be here.
Absolutely. So Sarah, to kick it off, for those that might not be familiar with your work, tell us a bit more about high profile and how you got started in the industry.
Absolutely. So high profile staffing is what I call a boutique agency. We're a small independent staffing firm in Dallas, Texas, primarily. We do direct hire placements all over, but we got our start in Dallas over 35 years ago, and that's where our hub is. There's only one location. And we handle accounting and finance, HR, and administrative placements in a contract to hire and direct hire capacity. My partner, Shonda Parker, and I specialize on the HR side. So we handle anything and everything, HR and talent acquisition placements, entry level. So someone maybe straight out of college or looking to transition into HR talent acquisition, all the way up to that senior VP level. It's kind of our sweet spot. And I got my start in recruiting. I literally fell into it. I had no plans. I didn't even know what a recruiter was when I graduated from Texas Tech. So I was going to go into the medical field. I really wanted to be in medicine. I have a bachelor's degree in human development and biology. And that's what I was going to do. And then I did an internship with a hospital there in Lubbock and decided real quick that was not going to be the life for me. It is my senior year at Tech. I was about to graduate. I was like a month shy of graduating. Uh-huh. And I panicked. I was like, I don't know what to do. There's a career fair on campus that I went to, and I found Aerotech. So I got my start at Aerotech, one of the largest privately held staffing firms in the US. And they were starting up a scientific division, lo and behold. And I was like, yay, I can use my brain and I can talk to people. This is perfect.
Perfect combo.
I know. And I've never looked back. I jumped in both feet ahead and then kind of went from the agency side to corporate. And then I found my way back to agency. And so I've been at High Profile since November of 2014 and loved every minute.
That's amazing. And it just speaks to when we're, I guess, younger or at college age, sometimes we don't know what we want. You know, we think we might have an idea, but once we start doing the actual job or we're in the career, we realize, hey, this is not what I thought it was going to be, right? And I feel like a lot of people out there, maybe even some candidates, right, mm-hmm. feel this way, and they have to pivot into, well, first of all, having that courage to pivot, right? Because it does take courage to put a pause into your own trajectory and say, wait a minute, this doesn't feel right, right? Because a lot of people feel that discomfort, but they're like, you know what, I invested so much time and money into this, I'm just going to keep going, even though I might hate it. But yeah. I just want to celebrate you for having that courage, because it does take courage. Mm-hmm. So what was the first year like for you when you made that pivot and you were now officially in the recruiting industry? You know, what was that year like? What were some of your biggest learnings and I guess the thing that you were not expecting that turned out to be like a big lesson?
You know, I mean, I didn't realize, you know, at the time, recruiting in the office that I was in was very boiler room like if you think like the New York Stock Exchange and those people smiling and dialing. Yeah, I mean, that's really what it was, and I guess I hadn't anticipated that, like the quick and the turn and burn of it, right? And the grueling hours. I mean, we were there, you know, 12 hours a day, 6 days a week, if you wanted to make money, because I was making nothing salary wise. And then it was, they had a lucrative commission structure once you got up there. But you had to work, and people were falling off off your payroll left and right, and contractor management. And I guess maybe one of the biggest learning curves for me was not assuming that everyone knows everything. You know, like I assume, you know, if, you know, my boss tells me I'm supposed to be somewhere at 7:45 in the morning, I'm there at 7:40, right? That's how I was raised. That's, you know, all of that. People really don't know. I mean, and that was a big learning curve for me, is really taking the time out to pause throughout this crazy rat race and holding people's hand and walking them through step by step. And that was the biggest, I think, life lesson and learning curve for me, was to just not assume, you know, just to assume that people don't know and walk them through. And if they're like, "Hey, Sarah, I got it. Don't worry. I know when to show up to work." I'm like, "Oh, well, good. But just in case you didn't, here's this email that outlines everything. Let me just make sure your email address is right." So taking time to do that, I feel, was the biggest learning curve for me.
Yeah, that's a big one, especially during the, I guess, onboarding process, right? Not making any assumptions. Mm-hmm. I mean, and that's something that I keep front and center as well, because assumptions, they're just not, there's room for misunderstandings, right? Whenever you make assumptions. Awesome. And there's two questions I had as a follow-up to your story. Mm-hmm. First thing, when you mentioned my light bulb went on, and it's the fact that high profile is very niched and mm-hmm. local. And one of the advice that I keep hearing often is that staffing firms and recruiters should find a way to niche down. Mm-hmm. Because this will give them an edge, right? And what's your experience been like being a very localized niche firm? Do you feel like it's giving you an advantage over being more, I guess, more broad and more general?
Absolutely. I think there's 100% advantage to that. And plus, you get to know your people, right? Mm. You get to know your market. You get to know the ins and outs. Like, you know, in the DFW area, you know, if someone's living, you know, outside of my normal scope, they're, because I'm so well networked within our market, Shonda and I can pivot very quickly, and we can provide resources to those people. If we're not the best firm to help them, that we know can help them very quickly. So not only are you providing a service and you're helping somebody, but you're opening that door for further conversations later on down the road, because you took the time not to help them. I think getting plugged into your local organizations within your market is mm-hmm. vital for recruiters, especially if you want to take your career to the next level. You know, if you want to be general and you want to be nationwide and you like all those balls, you know, in the air at all times, that's awesome. But for me, I really like to be known as more of that go-to person. Mm-hmm. I know, Shonda and I are very focused on growing our brand and growing our business within high profile in the HR community and being that go-to person. So you got to go to those networking events. You got to participate in the discussions on the Dallas HR board, getting involved on different organizations and boards that are local. So that way you can help and really make an impact. I think gives you a huge advantage.
I agree with you 100%. And it's you become the go-to firm, the go-to person in that region, right? People yeah. know that if they need a specific talent, they can go to Sarah, they can go to high profile, right? Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of times, oftentimes, the fear of missing out, I think it ends up costing recruiters and firms because they want to start general and broad, and we can do everything and all the recs and all the positions, just... Yeah. Bring them all, right? But at the beginning, right, when you're starting out, and even after, you can spread yourself too thin and be nobody to everybody, if that makes sense.
Yes. Exactly. And then you become a number, right? And in what I call, you know, the fly-by-night recruiters who are just in it to make a super quick placement, turn and burn. And yes, there is an element of that within recruiting, right? Like, let's not kid ourselves here. But when you take the time to cultivate that relationship, with a candidate, with a client, you're able to take them to coffee, you're able to do those different things to really get to know who they are and what they want out of their career. Not only have I made a lifelong candidate, I've probably also made a lifelong client too. You know, we did a survey not too long ago at High Profile, and over 80% of our candidates and clients come from referrals, right? Like, hey, I had a great experience. Yeah, it's the best. And you know, who would have thought, right? You do the right thing happens, right? You know, you treat people how you want to be treated. And lo and behold, they're going to refer you business. And it just, you know, it keeps going, and you get to keep perpetuating a good karma out in the market, and you're able to really make a quick impact.
Absolutely. And there's a few follow-ups to that. What are some of the key touch points that you have developed to ensure that you wow your clients, and then, you know, the result is referral? Like, what are some of the key touch points that High Profile has in place to ensure that you deliver 110%?
Yeah, you know, I mean, no one's perfect. I will start there. I'm not perfect by any stretch of the imagination, but you know, we try to be the very best at following up and following through and having honest and frank conversations, not only with our candidates, but with our clients. You know, if we've placed, an HR generalist, right? And they're fabulous and they're wonderful, but now they're like, hey, Sarah, I need this wild purple unicorn person. Go out and find it. I mean, and yes, that's my job, is to go out and find the purple unicorn.
Right.
But to have honest and frank conversations with them and level set the expectation and say, hey, here's where we're at. We're starting from scratch with this search. You know, if I run into roadblocks, I'm going to tell you what A, B, C, D, and E are. Are you coming to market with a fair price? For this person, you know, let's talk about it. Let's be collaborative. Let's set weekly meetings so that way you and I can touch base about the search and see what we're finding in the market. And then if you like a candidate or if you don't like a candidate, tell me why. Yeah, well, I'm not a delicate daisy. You're not going to hurt my feelings. So, you know, let's talk about, you know, what makes this person stand out to you and what you absolutely did not like about this other person, so we can fine tune, right? I mean, you know, going for those specialized searches it's a process and it takes time, even in this crazy market, as fast as we're trying to work. But you have to have those key meetings and set all the expectations up front, especially on the client side. On the candidate side, you know, we do, if someone applies to our website or we get their resume or information, we try to reach out to them within 48 business hours at the latest. Just to say, hey, you know, I got your information. Let's get something scheduled. Get them on the calendar. Yeah, I think it's just time is of the essence, right? I mean, we know that as recruiters, but also they need to feel important, and that, hey, like, I got your information from so-and-so, or this is how I got your information. Let's talk, let's get it on the calendar. Let's see what we can do. From there, we'll have an interview. We'll send them our paperwork within 24 hours, whether it's contract hire, direct hire. We'll walk through all of our openings that we have, kind of tell them a lay in the lead of what we have and what we don't have. And you know, the beauty and the curse of staffing is that could change in 24 hours. So again, setting those expectations, you know, and we also tell candidates, hey, you have got to reach out to us too. You know, we will call you when we get new roles in. We will touch base with you when we get new roles in. But if we don't hear from you, the market's moving so fast that we think that you don't need us, right? So it's a communication, is a two-way street. Let's build that bridge together. From there, you know, when we're setting up interviews, you know, we send very lengthy interview emails that walks them through everything about that client. You know, the client's LinkedIn information, we send press releases, we send job descriptions, we send cultural things that we've seen within the organization, what's going to be the right personality fit for them to ensure that they still want to do, you know, be a part of that organization, right? Because it doesn't do me any good to try to put a round peg in a square hole. And so if we can vet any of that out before, let's go ahead and do it. As we're moving through the interview process, you know, sometimes some certain clients like to take a little bit of time with their interviews, multiple interviews. And we try to streamline that. And again, set those expectations up front. You know, is there an assessment? Is there going to be multiple panel interviews? Are you going to have to go on site? Like, really kind of laying it out for them up front so they know what to expect if and when they do move forward. When they do get the offer, you know, we do all that fun negotiation form, whether it's direct hire, contract, all of that. And then for direct hire candidates, we like to make them feel really special on their first day. We'll send flowers, we'll send cookies. We try to remember everyone's hire date and their anniversary date. You know, just try to make it, you know, a special time. It's a huge milestone in someone's life. to help them get a new role, to better their family, to better themselves. So it needs to be celebrated from all avenues.
So much good stuff in there that I want to dive deeper into it, but I just wanted to echo that, yes, expectations and communication are by far the number one thing, right? Because when you have that with the client and with the candidates, everybody knows what to expect, right? Mm-hmm. There's no surprises. And I think that's one of the biggest, negative feedbacks that you hear often, that there's always this gap in communication. Now, a couple things here that I wanted to dive deeper into it. And it's all related to the employer value proposition, right? And what companies can do to improve the overall experience. One of the things that you mentioned that I thought it was interesting on the candidate side is a lot of the advice out there for candidates is you gotta research the company, right? Mm-hmm. You gotta take notes, read about the founders, the CEO, and all of that. And when you mentioned that you help to the best of your ability in putting some sort of information together for the candidate, mm-hmm. so that they know more about the company and, you know, their organization, their role, I think that's so, so helpful. And it's just leading with adding value, right? Because from a candidate perspective, and I've been on the job search side, right? It takes a lot of work to research a company. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was super, super helpful. And what other recommendations would you have for clients, right, for organizations in terms of enhancing the overall hiring process or the brand, you know, for that matter?
Yeah. Well, for the hiring process, especially in this market, right? I mean, that's what you turn the news on and you just hear like the job market's wild. It's this,
right?
You know, I mean, we're going to have, you know, are we going into recession? No, it's the best economic time ever. You know, I mean, no matter what you turn on, it's something that relates back to the job market and how quickly mm-hmm. it's moving. So my best advice for employers is if you have certain things that you want done within the hiring process, mm-hmm. get them up front and out of the way as quick as possible. Like, time is of the essence. You know, will you lose a candidate in 24 hours? Maybe. You know, and I've had some clients push back like, well, then they definitely don't want to work here. I was like, well, they don't know you yet. Like, you know, mm-hmm. I mean, they need to keep their options open too as candidates. Like, that's right. Not fair. It's fair to them. So if you have an assessment, if you have cultural assessments, or like maybe an Excel test or whatever you want this person to do, let's get it done up front and out of the way first. And then streamline your interview process from there. Like, do you want an initial Zoom interview? Do you then a panel interview and then an on-site and then a phone call? That's ridiculous. Like, let's stream it down. Like, you know, I mean, I think maybe three interviews, I think, is probably a good sweet spot mm-hmm. for most people. Because if you don't know about that person, or that candidate doesn't know after three interviews, after meeting, you know, their team, it's probably not going to be the right fit.
Yeah.
And that's okay. But, you know, let's try to streamline that. I mean, we have a couple of clients that will, I mean, have people interview 5, 6, 7 times. And you're like, but why?
Yeah.
But why? What else do you want to know about this person? Do you want their social security number? What do you want?
It just reflects back the inefficiencies in their own internal processes, right? Mm-hmm. Like, if after 6 or 7 interviews, you don't have a decision, then yeah, as a candidate, probably you don't want to work there anyways. Right?
It's crazy. It's just crazy. We see it, unfortunately, more times often than not. And, you know, part of our job is to do that client education and say, hey, okay, so what can we streamline? You know, mm-hmm. if we are going to do multiple interviews like that, how quick can we book them back to back? Can we take a week out of this person's time to get that done? You know, to knock it all out and see if they're going to get to the finals, how can we make the best use of everybody's time so that way this flows quickly and efficiently and no one feels strung along?
Yeah. I like what you mentioned there on educating the client, mm-hmm. right? Educating the organization. And I think that's a great way for staffing agencies to go from to become that strategic partner, right? Mm-hmm. That goes above and beyond. Like identifying those inefficiencies in the process and going back to the client and saying, hey, I think we're losing candidates here. Maybe we can, you know, fix A, B, and C, right?
Absolutely. And to your point with that, with being a strategic partner, that's something that a high profile really does try to do from the get-go. Mm-hmm. You know, we have, you know, our intake meetings, just like everyone does, right? But our client services team, I have to give them a huge shout out. They do such a fantastic job with going out, and they have, they've done webinars for our clients. They do webinars for our candidates. Like around COVID, for example, there was so much information and so much misinformation out there. We were like, how can we add value to people right now? How can we help people right now? Because that's our goal, right? You know, high profile, our mission, part of our mission statement says we're a company with a heart. And so taking, it's different, right? It's yeah. very different. And that's one of the reasons why we have some of the best tenure in the business. You know, we have people on our team that have been here for over 20 years, in a recruiting role, mm-hmm. which is wild to see.
Yeah. Especially this day and age.
I know. And so our client services team did such a great job of taking all this information around COVID, and we put together webinars and like a landing page, like a resource that we were able to send out to our candidates. Like, hey, here's how you file for unemployment. Here's, you know, what the latest CDC guidelines are. Mm-hmm. You know, here is, you know, from a client standpoint, here is what people are doing, other clients are doing in the market. You know, we had employment attorneys do a big webinar and saying, hey, like, how do you get people back into the office? Right. You know, does that open you up for risk? Right. Just different things that as a staffing firm, you didn't have to do, but it provided value, right? It enriched our candidate experience. It enriched our client experience. And we were able to provide value and really help people in a really awful time. Did we make money off of it? Maybe, you know, not really. It was a lot of effort, but we were able to help. And so that's not always the main goal.
And that's it, right? It's all about being able to help. And with content, right, there's no short-term gain.
Right.
For, you know, in most businesses, the gain or the ROI is brand building, right? Mm-hmm. Because you will put together these events, this content on and educate it, your clients, now they love you even more, right? Because you're doing this, you're not expecting anything in return. I mean, you are, right? Like you expect them to bring your business, but in the short term, right? You're just mm-hmm. like, hey, we know there's a lot of misinformation out there. We know it can be confusing. There's a lot of noise. We're bringing you experts in topics like, you know, law and compliance and remote work and all those relevant topics, right? So you are definitely doing it right. It takes a lot of work, right? To create mm-hmm. content, to put together events, mm-hmm. and you're not going to see the immediate return. It's almost like farming, right? I always like to use that analogy of the farmer, where initially, right, you're just growing, you're just planting the seed, water it, and then eventually 6 months or a year, you'll see the sprout, I guess.
Absolutely. Yes, the sales process is long. I mean, it's not an instant. I mean, yes, every now and then you'll get like some instant gratification here and there, but that sales process is long, and it's all about relationships. And like you said, cultivating and growing those relationships. Mm-hmm. In doing the right thing and providing resources. Even before COVID, High Profile would do candidate seminars to where it was like once a quarter, we would have candidates come in and we would help them with their resumes.
Perfect.
Yeah, resume workshops to put together different things. I know on the client side, they put together some different lunch and learns. Mm-hmm. One of them was that comes to mind was an active shooter lunch and learn. Yeah, and it was like, what do you do? Like how, you know, as HR, and we invited HR leaders to come and say, hey, what do you do? Right. I mean, you know, I mean, unfortunately,
why do you do it?
yeah, I mean, it's a reality that it has unfortunately has happened. So how do you educate your staff? How do you educate your managers? How do you even put a plan together for something like that? You know what I mean? Like you're told as kids, you know, hey, if there's a tornado, you know, go in the stairwell kind of a thing, you know? But you're not, who's prepared for that? Right. So just educating people from all aspects, right. To help them do their job better. And more efficiently, and really provide value from a different lens. So hopefully, when they do have a need, you know, we're their first call.
That's it, right? You position yourself in the minds of your potential clients, right? That's one of the goals. Now, Sarah, one of the other questions I just remembered that I wanted to ask you from your first year in staffing, where it was like a lot of boiler room style. To today, right? What's been the biggest change, if any, that you have experienced in the industry, you know, and for maybe for someone that might be looking into getting into the industry, you know, just providing that perspective?
I would say the biggest change is quality, right? I mean, it's not, you know, at first, you know, when I first joined, like you said, the boiler room, the quick, fast, as fast as you can. And then now, you know, as a more seasoned recruiter, I'm focused on quality. I mean, yes. I mean, let's not kid ourselves. Like that's how we pay our bills is by filling all the things, right? but having quality job orders, quality conversations with candidates, quality conversations with clients, finding the top quality candidates, and then doing my homework and my due diligence to be able to present those candidates in the best way possible, right? And that takes more time, right? I mean, it takes more time, and it's but having more quality across the board, and then in expectation setting, I think would probably be the biggest thing that I feel like I've improved on in my career. And it, you know, there's copious amounts of room to get better as we grow. But yeah, I mean, I would say that's the main change. And then also tools, right? I mean, when I first started in recruiting, I feel like a billion years ago, there wasn't that many tools. I mean, right. There was Monster, and then Career Builder was just starting to get kicked off. At the time, Aerotech was starting to roll out their own applicant tracking system and their own system and nationwide database that they had, to where all offices were going to be on the same database to create like kind of this mega one.
Right.
That was in the infant stages then. And now, I mean, we have so many tools, it's crazy. And new ones are popping up every day. So I think also too, as a recruiter, while you cannot ever replace the human touch, the human element in recruiting, you have to be technically savvy and be able to navigate these new tools and be willing to branch outside your comfort zone and try new tools and try new tips and tricks and see if it's going to produce a different kind of candidate and different quality candidates for you.
Do you have any specific tools that they use, whether it could be like automating certain parts of the process or whatever you use?
I'm just curious. I think the latest one that I was super resistant, I have to say, this is going to show my age a little bit, super resistant to jump on board with Calendly. I love having control of my calendar. And I was like, I'm not giving that up. It's ridiculous. Why would I do that? It's the easiest, most wonderful thing under the sun. It eliminates so many unnecessary emails. I still have control of my calendar, but I just now like just got on board with it. So there's that.
That's awesome.
Yeah, you know, which is kind of silly to say, but I love, you know, we use Zoom Info very, very heavily to find candidates and clients and leads and all of that. LinkedIn Recruiter. I mean, I know people, it's a hot button for a lot of folks.
Yeah, it is.
but I've used that. And I've also used Seek Out before. And then Indeed. I mean, I think those are probably our, you know, my go-tos. I also create a lot of different Boolean searches and save them in Google. And then, you know, as I need them, I tweak them and do my whole internet stalking per se on people that way. So, you know, just I mean, those are probably the main ones that I use, but new ones are popping up all the time. I mean, I'm on the board for DFWTR and the Texas Recruiters Network, and we hear about all sorts of cool stuff all the time and how people are using, you know, new avenues to find people. And I sat in on a webinar the other day talking about TikTok. People are using TikTok for jobs. And I mean, it's, you know, like more Amazon and those types of bigger companies, but using that for their employer branding, advertising jobs on TikTok. They're doing like day in the life of Amazon, you know, Amazon warehouse worker or something like that. And I was like, hot dang, like, why? Like, that's so cool. Like, I love the social media push with it. I think that's, it's fun. It's fresh. It's relatable. Yeah. Companies are able to do that. Not just post the canned, you know, the canned content, the canned pictures, but really, you know, have lively discussions about their jobs, post day in the life. So I think that's really interesting and intriguing.
It is. I mean, there's so many tools to the point that it's overwhelming. Picking your niche, it becomes helpful because once you know who you're going after, who your audience is, then you can pick your tools based on that, right?
Absolutely.
Does TikTok make sense for you? Who's your audience, right? Who are you going after, right? Does LinkedIn make sense? Probably. Everybody's on LinkedIn. So.
Almost everyone.
Yeah, almost everyone. Now, Sarah, there's two things I want to make sure that we cover. One is it takes a lot of work, right, to find a candidate, put them through the process, and for it to not work out, right? And I see this happening a lot, especially in this candidate-driven market. What would be some of your recommendations or, you know, things to anticipate when it comes to retaining talent, the once you put them through the process, once they, I guess, accepted the offer, I guess those first 90 days, right? Like what are some of the things that you're seeing or some of your recommendations based on your experience? Because that can be very painful for both the recruiter and the organization, right? So.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I definitely think doing 30, 60, 90 day check-ins, you know, not only does the client that I placed a candidate at need to be doing that, but I need to be doing that as well, right? Checking in. Hey, how's it going? How was your first week? How was this?
Right.
And that can be a quick email, right? I mean, it doesn't have to be anything elaborate.
Right.
But doing those check-ins, you know, and if there's a problem, get in front of it, you know, be like, hey, or do you just need to vent? Is there a sounding board? Like what's going on? Do I need to put my therapist hat on?
Right. Oh my God. That's awesome.
We are. And, you know, and helping candidates kind of navigate that. Right. And then if there is a legitimate problem, you know, helping them navigate that, and then also knowing when to intervene. And talk to that hiring manager, be like, hey, is there, you know, are you working on getting, you know, the problem child out of your department? Because they're really impacting your new hire, right? So making sure that you have that relationship with that client in order to have those conversations, I think is something that we have to do on the front end. And then also once candidates have been there, you know, for a year or so, I think it's really great when clients and organizations do stay interviews. Right. You know, you always hear about the exit interview, you always hear about that, but doing the stay interview and walking the candidate through. So, hey, how's it going? You've been here a year, and taking the review aspect out of it, but really interviewing them on why they like working there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what do you want out of this role? Do you see yourself being promoted? What kind of role do you want to get promoted to? How can I help support you in that? And then also following through with those promises. So don't promise something you can't deliver on, but making sure that you're really following through with that. And then also, you know, taking that feedback, taking those surveys that I'm sure, you know, every HR department across, you know, the US is doing 1,000 of them at a time. And with these stay interviews and helping develop, you know, hey, do we need to add more to our benefit plan? Do we need more cultural things? Do we need, you know, beer cart Fridays? You know, or do people even care about beer cart Fridays anymore? You know, walking through those, because those little tiny tweaks, when someone feels heard and they feel seen and that their boss is actually trying to do something to help them and make their life easier, really go a long way, especially in the remote world that we're all in right now, and helping them, you know, feel valued, feel like they're still part of the team, even though they're kind of sort of on an island.
Right. Yeah.
And Yeah, and then for me, we make sure that we're putting their someone's hire date and anniversary date on our calendar, a year from when they start, and reaching out to them. Hey, happy anniversary! It sounds like things are going great. Just checking in with them then, seeing how it's going. Who knows? They could have been promoted and maybe not put it on LinkedIn, or maybe failed to tell me. So I could send them some cookies or a card or something to say congratulations and help them feel celebrated.
I
So
love
just
that.
those little
Yeah.
things can matter.
It's almost like mapping out, the post-hiring experience, 30, 60, 90 days, and identifying those touch points, right, that are worthy of mention and make the candidate feel heard and that they matter, right? And I like what you mentioned of the stay interview. I never heard that term before. So I think it's because typically we think about exit interview or the performance review, which anytime you mention that, it's just like, oh, people
Everyone bristles.
people put like a stoic face. And like, I don't know if I want to do this. And there's no opportunity to be open and honest, right? And on the second thing that I mentioned, following through. Because from my experience as a candidate and other companies, they did that, right? They did the check-in and the exit interview, but I found out that they never implemented any of the feedback that I provided, right? So following through is, I think it's underrated, but it's so important, right? Because yeah, you're making me feel hurt, but are you actually going to follow through? So
Absolutely. And I have to say, here at High Profile, my leadership team has done a really great job of that. Yes, we'll do surveys and we'll do things like that, but my president and CEO, Bronwyn Allen, will go above and beyond. And she's like, hey, I know we talked about this on this time and this date. I wanted to let you know I haven't forgotten about that. But we're still continuing to talk about that and have conversations. And it's like, wow, great. Like, you cared about what I thought. And it goes a long way. It really does go a long way.
it does, right? Make me feel like you care. Awesome. And in terms of trends, Sarah, what are some of the trends that you are following closely that are impacting the industry? And yeah, how are you keeping up with everything going on? What are some of the things that you're following?
Oh yeah, as far as trends go, I mean, but there's so many on the talent acquisition and HR side, right? I mean,
Yeah, I
it's
mean,
overwhelming.
yeah.
It really is overwhelming. But staying on top of the tech, the latest and greatest tools and tips and trends, and then also really dialing into our community. So my partner Sean and I handle everything HR and talent acquisition. And so following through, what do our candidates want? Right. What are we seeing? What are the trends here? And communicating that to our clients. We know every year, kind of mid-July, we're going to start getting calls for benefit roles, right? So following those trends and like sourcing benefit candidates to try to get ahead of the game, and then also communicating, the virtual work environment for my recruiting candidates. I mean, if clients aren't willing to at least have some flexibility with that, it is hard to get a candidate interested.
Right. Yeah.
In their
There has to
opportunity.
be some flexibility built into that.
And I think that the flexibility trend and the work remote trend are something that we see constant across the board. So and I don't see that going away either. I really don't.
It's that it's here to stay, right? And with remote work especially, right? There's always this challenge of if the staff, I don't think it would apply for high profile because you are local and niched, but other staffing firms, right, that might be based in Florida and they have a candidate remotely from Washington, Seattle, right? And their client is based in New York, right? Like how do you navigate that compliance complexity, as I would call it?
Yes, it's
Yeah.
crazy. It's so many layers, right?
It's
It's
so
so
many
many
layers.
layers. And what works for one team, right, might not work for the other. So having, when companies have that blanket approach, it's a little sticky to
Doesn't
navigate.
work.
It doesn't work.
One of the recommendations I heard from one of the sessions at Executive Forum when it comes to remote work is that whatever the candidate is, that's where whatever the candidate physically is located, those are the laws and compliance requirements that you should be concerned about as a staffing firm client. So I thought that was at least provided some guidance into how to navigate this whole remote work and compliance and post-COVID era.
Absolutely. And that's some great advice. I mean, especially as you open things up and do some nationwide searches and things like that. I mean, it's you got to go with their individual market and say, hey, like, is this competitive for this market? Is this working for that market? There's a lot of extra research that goes into that.
Yeah, 100%. And Sarah, how do you keep up? What are some of the books or, I guess, blogs, or how do you consume your information to keep up to date in your skill sets in what's going on in the industry, whether it's a book recommendation or some sort of course that you're taking or whatever, right?
Yeah.
I'm just curious about that.
So I have my CSP and my CIR. So I go to the American Staffing Association and AERS very frequently to just kind of look at, you know, hey, compliance, what's going on here? What's changing here? And then for us being in Dallas, we are very, very, very well networked and plugged into Dallas HR. It is one of the largest SHRM chapters in the United States. All my candidates, all my clients are somehow connected within Dallas HR or Fort Worth HR. So for me, you know, having a presence there, I know my VP of sales, she is the president-elect of Dallas HR right now. We had our other client relationship manager. She just won Volunteer of the Year. So, you know, we're very, very plugged in, right? And then also I'm on the board for DFW-TRN or the Texas Recruiters Network. And we're one of the largest networks for recruiters only. And so we have different webinars and trainings and tips and tricks that we do every month to try to provide value. We were meeting all in person, and now we're trying to spice it up and do some virtual, some in person, some happy hours, things like that.
Yeah.
So I still strongly feel that you have got to get networked in your community. You know, what are the local organizations? You got to get out there. You got to go. You got to participate, right? However, I'm glad you asked me about the books, because I am reading Life in the Leadership Lane now by Bruce Waller. It's a phenomenal book. I've really enjoyed it thus far. It talks a little bit about leadership qualities, his trials and tribulations, and what made him, you know, take a leap of faith, right, and start his whole career over. And then he's also interviewing top HR executives that are local here in the DFW area, and getting insight into their brains and how they work and how they think and what makes a strong leader and what made them take, you know, have this leap of faith and go in this direction or go in that direction. And it, you know, helps organize your day a little bit. So I do love Life in the Leadership Lane. I have to give Bruce a big shout out there. And then other books that I've read throughout my career that really made an impact on me are The Mentor Maker. And it's a giant book. I've got it on Amazon. It walks through these top business leaders. What made them successful in business, right? You know, like, you know, the no fluff, there's lots of colorful language in it. So if someone's offended by colorful language, probably not the best book for you. So that one is great. And then when I first started over at Aerotech, someone recommended a book to me called Fierce Conversations and how to have direct and clear and sometimes hard conversations with colleagues or candidates or your boss that are uncomfortable, but do it in a professional setting. So I'd have to say those three books have been some of my favorites so far that have really just stuck with me.
I'll make sure to include those in the show notes. And I love that the books are all about communication and leadership, which I would say are probably the two biggest skill sets that not just recruiters or staffing agencies, but all of us, right, can develop. And we don't need to be a leader. You know, we already are leaders, at least in my perspective.
I think so too. I mean, our job is to help someone in some of the biggest decisions of their life, right? Mm-hmm. If you don't have some leadership skills or confidence in your ability in order to provide that kind of service to that person, that one individual person, maybe recruiting probably shouldn't be for you.
Right.
You know, you're helping them navigate these changes and you've got to be able to help them, right? And come from a lens of helping.
Absolutely. Sarah, how often do you have events and meetings for the DFW chapter?
For DFW TRN, we have a monthly. We have a monthly, and they can go to dfwtrn.org. And I think our next event is this Wednesday. This Wednesday, we're having Shannon Pritchett with SourceCon come and do a webinar for us. It's free right now. So come on, holler at us.
Sign up, register.
And then also
it's without next Wednesday, right? Not tomorrow. Okay.
Next Wednesday. And then with Dallas HR, they have stuff all the time. And what's really cool about Dallas HR is that it's also broken out into subgroups. So there's the big overall meetings that they have every other month that also have an education credit tied to it as well, for your PHR, SPHR, global PHR. But they also have subgroups. So they have like a leadership group, the executive group, right? And you have to be at a certain level in order to be a part of that, to network with them. They have the job link group that is everybody who's in transition or maybe looking to make a transition. So they have that specific networking group. They have different groups for comp and benefits professionals. They have, HR generalist, HR manager, different groups and coffee talks. And we just had in February, the HR Stars Gala. So it was, it's a volunteer organization. And so your peers got to vote a staffing agency, or I'm sorry, a recruiting team of the year, volunteers of the year, HR executive leadership of the year for small, medium, and large size organizations. It's really, really great group. Can't recommend it enough.
That's amazing. And we'll be sure to also include links in the show notes so that whoever's interested, they can check out these two organizations. Awesome, Sarah. Well, I feel like we could talk for hours. This has been an amazing episode. Lastly, where can people find you, get in contact with you? What's the best way to reach out?
Absolutely. You can reach out to me on LinkedIn. I'm pretty active. I try to check that at least once a day, every day. Right. Also you can shoot me an email, sstaub@highprofilestaffing.com. We are pretty open and transparent people, and I'd love to help anybody that we can.
Excellent. We'll make sure to also include the contact information in the show notes. But for now, thanks so much for coming on the show and just sharing your journey into the staffing industry. And more about tools and tactics and strategies that other firms and recruiters can use to continue excelling at other jobs. So thanks so much for coming and being so kind with your time.
Yes, absolutely. Thanks so much for reaching out and asking me. This has been so fun.